Hello, you're with Helen with the Talk and Information Center with readings from Wired. First article is from the Wired magazine, March-April of 2026. Inside China's AI Registry by Yi Ling Lu. From Alibaba to Zaipu, thousands of Chinese companies are taking part in the domestic AI boom, and the government keeps tabs on them all. There are 3,700 plus total number of AI algorithms registered, 2,000 plus number of companies with registrations, and 250 to 300 average number of new registrations per month. The data current is as of April 2025 and includes both generative AI and deep synthesis algorithms. When DeepSeek burst onto the global stage in January of 2025, it seemed to appear out of nowhere. But the large language model was just one of the thousands of generative AI tools that have been released in China since 2023. And there's a public archive of them, of all of them. The country's top internet regulator, the Cyberspace Administration of China, CAC, requires that any company launching an AI tool with public opinion properties or social mobilization capabilities first file it in a public database, the algorithm registry. Developers must show how their products avoid 31 categories of risk, from age and gender discrimination to psychological harm to violating core socialist values. Applicants submit their filing to their local CAC, which sends it to the central CAC for final approval. Only then is a tool publicly listed in the algorithm registry. Open the agency's update from August of 2024, and you'll find DeepSeek listed as entry number 152, a single row in a neatly packed table. Scroll through the table, and you'll find AIs that manage homestays, draft patents, assist OBGYNs, and help oversee state power grids. While the European Union is pursuing a comprehensive AI Act, notes Matt Sheehan, a scholar at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, China's approach to regulation is more ad hoc. The U.S. has no comparable system or agency. Still, over time, the CAC has inadvertently created the most detailed map of nations' AI ecosystem anywhere in the world. Researchers at Trivium China, a Beijing-based policy consultancy, have been compiling the CAC's updates into a comprehensive database enriched with their own research. A broad view of the boom. Nearly 80% of China's generative AI registrations are clustered in and around its top tech hubs, Beijing, Shenzhen, Shanghai, and Hangzhou. Each city has its strengths. Beijing's elite universities, national labs, and political strength give it an edge in large-scale innovation. Shenzhen in Guangdong is home to a dense hardware supply chain and a vast pool of engineering talent. Shanghai, close to multinationals, excels at commercialization, and Hangzhou in Zhejiang is fueled by Alibaba's e-commerce empire. But innovation spreads far beyond the coast. Shangqing is positioning itself as an AI manufacturing and logistics node, and heavy state investments has helped Hefei in Anhui province become known as China's Speech Valley for its cluster of speech recognition firms, including iFlyTech. Filings also originate in less obvious regions like Guizhou, China's big data valley, where massive data centers power Huawei's Pangu model, and Inner Mongolia, where state enterprises are integrating AI into mining and agriculture. In the Trivium data set, state-linked listings from state-owned enterprises to government-backed research institutes make up 22% of filings. Many state-linked firms partner with big tech to build their AI. PetroChina, for example, teamed up with Huawei and iFlytek to create oil and gas applications. State Grid used DeepSeek to build a model optimizing power grids. Foreign firms make up just 0.5% of filings. IKEA, for example, has a smart shopper algorithm that generates product recommendations. Yum China, the parent company that operates Kentucky Fried Chicken in China, listed a model that generates menus and promotional material. Zeroing in on the competition, more than half of the listings in the algorithm registry are for what Trivium's Kendra Schaefer calls cross-sector technologies. These range from foundational models to general-purpose text generators to a wide array of multimedia tools, voice swappers, 3D renderers, image makers. Nobody wants to be caught in a situation where they depend on a competitor's technology, Schaefer says. While OpenAI, Anthropic, and Google DeepMind dominate the U.S. market, China's foundational AI competition remains diverse and contested. Still, building these models is costly, and the market is beginning to consolidate. China's six AI tigers, Moonshot, Minimax, Zaipu, Bakuin, 0.1A1, and Stepfun, are all backed by Alibaba or Tencent. ByteDance's Doubao surpassed DeepSeek as China's most popular chatbot, but its spot at the top is not assured. AI registrations by category. IoT is 2%, government is 3%, health is 5%, education 6%, general purpose 25%, all other categories 28%, and multimedia is 38%. The number of AI registrations by province. Beijing Municipality is 1,868. Shandong Province is 75. Jiangsu Province is 186. Anhui Province is 48. Shanghai Municipality, 616. Hubei Province, 88. Zhejiang Province, 381. Fujian Province, 95. Guangdong Province, 736. And Sichuan Province, 131. Yi Ling Lu is a journalist in residence at the Tarbell Center for AI Journalism. Her book, The Wall Dancers, Searching for Freedom and Connection on the Chinese Internet, will be published by Knopf this February. General Purpose Giants, DeepSeek, backed by High Flyer Capital. Trained on a fraction of the resources used by its U.S. rivals, DeepSeek's R1 model sparked what was called a Sputnik moment for Chinese AI in early 2025. Incubated in a Hangzhou hedge fund, DeepSeek is one of the few Chinese AI labs not bankrolled by tech giants. Its open source models are used in all sectors of Chinese society, from hospitals and government helplines to Huawei smartphones and Tencent's messaging platform WeChat. Doubao, created by ByteDance. The name of China's most popular chatbot translates as steamed bun with bean paste, which ByteDance's vice president likened to a nickname a user would give to an intimate friend. The chatbot is deeply integrated into ByteDance's viral mobile app, Douyin. It's known for a colorful interface and a dizzying array of features from text, audio, and video chat to image, spreadsheet, and podcast generation to personalized AI giants. Kimi, created by Moonshot AI. Kimi's creators are a trio of alumni from Tsinghua University, Yang Zilin, Zhou Xinyu, and Wu Yuixing. Their company takes its name from Yang's favorite Pink Floyd album, The Dark Side of the Moon. Yang, an idealist who believes in the pursuit of AGI, has described Moonshot as blending the technological idealism of OpenAI and the business philosophy of ByteDance. Kimi's signature ability is handling very long text queries. Chat Glim, created by Z.AI, a.k.a. Zipu AI, spun out of Tsinghua University by two computer science professors. Zipu AI, rebranded as Z.AI last year, is China's oldest AI unicorn. It was the first Chinese company to join Google, Meta, and OpenAI in signing AI safety commitments at an international summit in Seoul. Backed by both tech giants and the state, Zipu was added to the U.S. government's entity list in 2025, meaning U.S. firms need a license to sell its technology. Gwen, created by Alibaba. With 66 registered models, more than any other company, Alibaba has embedded AI across its empire. Even as it backs rival models from Moonshot, Minimax, and Z.AI, its own model, Gwen, remains competitive. Airbnb CEO Brian Chesky recently said he prefers Gwen to ChatGPT because it is fast and cheap. It was the most downloaded open source model of 2024. Talkie, from created by Minimax. Talkie lets users chat with customizable AI companions. And when the app first came out in North America, it went viral. Minimax also has a popular video generator, Heyoluo, and its own reasoning models. Last year, the company filed confidentially for a Hong Kong IPO. Niche natives. While the giants duke it out for chatbot supremacy, startups are hard at work in every sector imaginable. Healthcare. China's AI healthcare market is expected to grow by nearly 25% between 2025 and 2030, and tech giants and AI startups alike have jumped in. Alibaba's fintech arm rolled out AI agents that give medical advice. Baichuan pivoted from pushing the LLM frontier. Hospitals are partnering with firms like Huawei and SenseTime to develop in-house AI. AI Kanshi, founder Li Wenhua, available in clinics, pharmacies, and some hospitals, trained on 100K plus images of tongues, hands, faces. Profile, Li, a veteran of one of China's earliest online pharmaceutical platforms, wanted to combine the diagnostic methods of traditional Chinese medicine with modern machine vision. The company's name translates to AI sees tongue. Government operations. China is rapidly weaving AI into government operations. In Shenzhen, more than 70 AI-powered civil servants were reportedly deployed to assist officials in drafting documents, handling public inquiries, and identifying legal violations. China's AI Plus policy, released in August, called on officials to use AI to improve government efficiency. Zongtan Puhui Cloud Technology, founder Wu Song, sells AI climate auditors, coming soon to Amazon, Cloud, Microsoft, Azure, Europe. Profile, Zong, a former Wall Street quant trader, says the green transition still relies on cumbersome human labor that could be automated. According to the company, its AI agents can pull real-time data directly from power plants, allowing them to complete a task that once took up to 30 days and 15 minutes for a tenth the price. Its clients include juggernauts like China Minmetals Group and DHL, as well as small exporters in the Yangtze River Delta. Embodied AI. China holds an edge in AI that interacts with the physical world, autonomous vehicles, AI vacuum cleaners, humanoid robots. The city of Shenzhen, with its engineering talent, manufacturing capacity, and proximity to electronic supply chains, spearheads the push. New unicorns like Unitree vie with established behemoths like UBTech to push robots out of the lab and into the real world. In the future, teachers won't teach knowledge. They'll become data analysts, understanding learning reports and students' ability, and psychologists, understanding emotions and shaping their personalities. Derek Lee. Education. Chinese households spend on average 17% of their income on their children's education versus 1 or 2% in the United States. The most popular AI education platforms include Zhuiyingbang, a homework app, Tall's Math GPT, a math solver, and Doubao, Loves Learning, ByteDance's AI tutor. Squirrel AI, founder Derek Lee. Footprint, 3,000 centers across China. Students served, 1.2 million. Profile, Lee says his 12-year-old company is leaps beyond the ed tech competition. They put wheels on a horse, he says, bolting AI until their existing stale software. Squirrel claims to diagnose knowledge gaps, measure progress, and adjust lessons in real time. Lee withdrew his sons from a private school in Shanghai so that they could be homeschooled on the platform. What the registry doesn't show, Chinese AI is going global. Video and image generation. Unlike in the U.S., where there's a large demand for enterprise models, profits in China tend to come from the creator and consumer markets, fast-moving sectors with shorter product cycles and cheaper prices. Examples include social media company Zhuajia's Kling AI and Meitu's Beautycam. Xverse, founder Yao Ying, user base 28 million worldwide. Profile, the company's flagship product, Celo, turns chat conversations into immersive AI-driven story videos. It also has its own large language model, Xverse Moe, trained on news, code, literature, and academic papers, and is developing an AI-driven game, Xiao Yang Legend, set in the fantasy realm where players must ascend to the throne as a young crown prince and manage the kingdom. The game evolves dynamically based on players' decisions, creating endless possible plots and endings. UBTech, founder Zhao Jin, makes robots for factories, schools, healthcare facilities, homes, and more, sold in 48-plus countries. Profile, inspired after seeing Honda's Asimo robot at a tech fair in Japan, Zhao spent 6 years working on servo actuators, the joints that enable a robot's movement, before unveiling UBTech's first robot, Alpha. Its flagship Walker S series, designed for industrial and logistics work, is used by automakers like BYD and Zeekr. Its GMO and UKit robotics kits teach students coding, and AI Alpha Mini, its child-friendly humanoid, is in nursery schools in Seoul. The company also develops robots for elder care and companionship, as well as consumer devices like smart vacuums and lawnmowers. Toys. China's AI toy sector is booming, teeming with talking teddy bears, robot companions, and storytelling birds. A report by the Shenzhen Toy Industry Association and JD.com predicted it will surpass 100 billion RMB, $14 million, by 2030. Havivi founder Li Yong, number of bubble pals sold, 300,000 plus. Profile, Havivi's golf ball size orb, the bubble pal, transforms children's toys into chatty companions. It can speak in multiple languages and dialects, including French, German, Cantonese, and Sichuanese, and mimic more than 40 personalities, from Buzz Lightyear to Peppa Pig. A companion app offers parents weekly growth reports that analyze a child's conversations, emotions, and interests. Havivi says its models undergo strict reviews and monitoring to prevent inappropriate speech. In recent years, the term Chuhai, to go overseas, has become a buzzword as Chinese firms look abroad to escape slowing consumption and weak capital markets back home. China produces about a quarter of the world's top 100 AI products by revenue, and most of them target overseas markets. A top earner for the Hangzhou company Glority, for example, is a plant identification app called Picture This, which is popular outside China. To avoid geopolitical tripwires, some Chinese tech companies have been distancing themselves from their roots by hiring foreign staff, setting up headquarters in Singapore or California, or leaving China altogether. A company called Butterfly Effect, for example, was founded in China and built a general-purpose AI agent called Manus. Shortly after the U.S. established export controls on NVIDIA chips, the company relocated to Singapore, laid off most of its Chinese staff, and scrubbed all of its content from Chinese social media. Butterfly Effect's ambiguous identity raises a deeper question. What does it mean to be a Chinese AI company? The next article from this magazine is entitled Home Screens Are a Window into the Soul of a Person and Maybe Even a Country. Screen Time. WeChat. Zuck dreamed of building a walled garden around the internet. Tencent actually did it. With more than a billion users, WeChat is a hub for messaging, news, payments, transportation, government services, practically a parallel internet. You could download Didi for ride hailing, Meituan for restaurant discounts, JD for shopping, but the super app WeChat has them all. Douyin. Before ByteDance brought its algorithmic magic to international markets with TikTok, it charmed China with Douyin. More than a third of the country's population reportedly uses the app daily, and it earns billions every year from real-time sales by live streamers. For a more rural vibe, try Kuaishou instead. Jinri Toutiao. Though the name ByteDance strikes fear in all nine hearts on the U.S. Supreme Court, the company began life as a news aggregator called Jinri Tuotio, Today's Headlines. Made by loads of engineers and few, if any, journalists, the app offered killer algorithmic recommendations, the same kind that now power Douyin and TikTok. Sina Weibo, created in 2009 to fill the gap left by Twitter, turns out the party didn't appreciate all the commentary about its treatment of ethnic minorities. Weibo is still huge, but it's losing ground to newer platforms. Tip, if posting about the Tiananmen Square massacre, refer to it as May 35th. Keyboard apps. Chinese has way more characters than the poor QWERTY keyboard can handle. Baidu, Sogou, and other companies offer tools that use predictive text to simplify the writing process. Whether they're converting handwritten input or pinyinized Roman characters. These tools see everything users enter into their phones, so privacy concerns abound. NetEase. Come for the streaming indie music, stay for the poetic commons section. Sometimes known by the pun name Net Depression, NetEase is a place where people get over breakups and sometimes kindle new romances through shared playlists, live streams, and virtual karaoke rooms, like if Spotify had a soul. Honor of Kings. Pick your hero, circle your minions, and enter the infinite brawl. It's the highest-grossing mobile game ever, and it's an esport. More than 60,000 people went to Beijing's Bird's Nest Stadium for a recent tournament. Those who worry it's addictive and corrosive may call it by the near homophone, King Pesticide. Xia O Hong Shu, sometimes described as a mashup of Instagram, Pinterest, and Amazon, the app whose name means Little Red Book, became a haven for self-described refugees from TikTok during talk of a U.S. ban in 2025. "We are very sorry to interrupt you here," one American posted. "It's fine," a Chinese commentator replied. "When you guys are active, we are sleeping. We are sleeping." Alipay, spun out of the mega shopping platform Taobao more than 20 years ago, Alipay was the first financial company in China to introduce credit scoring and the first in the world to enable payments by facial scan. Like WeChat, it has evolved into a super app, offering access to bike shares, doctor's appointments, and a host of other services. Pinduoduo. Founder Colin Huang has described Pinduoduo as Costco plus Disney, value meets entertainment. It's an algorithmic bazaar with social features, allowing buyers to team up on purchases directly from manufacturers. Just as Douyin has TikTok, Pinduoduo has a sister juggernaut abroad, Temu. Bilibili, once a niche video sharing platform for anime heads and gamers, it has been embraced by China's Gen Z mainstream. The kids like its bullet screen, real-time user chat that flits across videos. The more popular a video, the more plastered in text. QQ, don't count QQ out just yet. Like MySpace and MSN Messenger, it refuses to die. Long eclipsed by WeChat, it maintains a stubbornly loyal user base, particularly in smaller cities and among younger audiences drawn to its gaming and social features. Homegrown heroes. These days, it's not imports that are exciting Chinese consumers. It's local brands, and some are going global. By Louise Masaka's additional research by Yaling Jiang. Li Ning Shadowrunner 3.0 sneakers. Chinese consumers are embracing domestically born sportswear brands like Li Ning that blend performance with street style aesthetics. Art 729 RMB, $103. Her Beast Raji Mushroom Sunscreen, SPF 50. China's beauty market is defined by an intense fixation on sun protection. With sleek packaging and science-forward claims, they treat makeup and sunscreen as lifestyle products, signaling that the wearer has superior taste and self-discipline. 410 RMB, $58. Huawei Free Clip Open Ear Wireless Earphones. Looking more like jewelry than dorky earbuds, the Free Clip series shows how Huawei has evolved into a design powerhouse. Once known for borrowing from Western brands, the company now has its own style. 1,259 RMB, $179. Chaji Ceylon Black Tea Latte. Chaji is part of a wave of homegrown coffee and tea brands in China like Luckin Coffee, Hey Tea, and Mixu, which have gradually chipped away at Starbucks' share of the market. 22 RMB, $3. To Summer Kunlun Snow Melt Candle. To Summer's candles and perfumes blend Eastern inspired scents with minimalist design, reflecting the growing appeal of carefully curated home environments for younger Chinese consumers. 359 RMB, $51. Camo. Songmont Mini Drippy Roof Bag. Chinese shoppers once gravitated toward handbags from labels like Louis Vuitton, but now brands like Songmont are finding traction with consumers drawn to understated silhouettes, thoughtful details, and the idea that good taste doesn't require a foreign name. 1,680 RMB, $240. Mithuan Power Bank. Mithuan's bright yellow power banks are nearly unavoidable in Chinese cities, stacked outside restaurants, subway stations, and inside malls. A dead phone is a genuine crisis, cutting off payments, navigation, messaging, and even access to buildings. Users can scan a QR code with their phone to rent a battery and avoid disaster. 2.1-6 RMB per hour, less than $1. ZZ Cat Treat with scratching board and play structure. Dogs and cats in urban China have increasingly become stand-ins for children. Receiving treatment worthy of human babies, ZZ turns everyday pet supplies into playful design objects, from cat sweaters and harnesses to grooming tools and clippers. 169 RMB, $24. Lightweight camping chair. These portable seats have become an unlikely urban accessory in China, popping up in malls and outside cafes as people embrace a slow-down, outdoorsy aesthetic without leaving the city. Less about practicality than symbolism, they represent a carefully staged form of leisure designed to be shared online. 208 RMB, $30. Camel Arctic Sentinel Elite NR99 paneled 3-in-1 jacket. Camel blew up in China as outdoor recreation went mainstream, turning sporting goods and outdoor gear into one of the country's fastest growing consumer sectors. Branded by fans as a cheaper Arc'teryx, Camel hit a sweet spot with jackets priced to make other outwear accessible. 1,999 RMB, $284. Some of the products are referred to by their Chinese real name. The next individual article, entitled "The Latest AI Documentary," asks, "Just how scared should we be?" Miles Klee, source Wired. It's not easy to get an interview with Sam Altman. Just ask Adam Bahalalow, the filmmaker behind the recent documentary Deepfaking Sam Altman. Low originally planned a feature exploring the potential and perils of AI that would center on a conversation with the OpenAI CEO. But after having his inquiries ignored for months, he opted instead to commission a chatbot that mimicked Altman's speech patterns and approximated his facial expressions by way of a digital avatar. The real Altman did sit down, however, for the new feature, The AI Doc, or How I Became an Apocalyptimist, which hits theaters March 27. So did Dario Amadi, the CEO of Anthropic, and Demis Hassabis, a co-founder and CEO of Google's DeepMind Technologies. Though the filmmakers say they requested interviews with Meta's Mark Zuckerberg and X's Elon Musk, neither made an appearance. It's an impressive level of access for co-director and documentary protagonist Daniel Roher, whose 2022 documentary Navalny about the Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny won an Academy Award. The problem is that once they're on camera, Altman et al. little we haven't heard before, and they skate by on glib answers concerning their responsibilities to the rest of their species. When Roller asks Altman why anyone should trust him to guide the rapid acceleration of AI, given its extreme ramifications, Altman replies, "You shouldn't." The line of interrogation ends there. The AI doc is framed by Roller's anxiety over the impending arrival of his son and first child with his wife, filmmaker Carolyn Lindy. He wonders what kind of a world his boy will inherit and whether the rise of artificial intelligence will preclude the experiences that develop us into self-sufficient adults. In Roller's first several interviews, all his worst fears seem to be confirmed. Tristan Harris, co-founder of the nonprofit Center for Humane Technology, delivers one of the worst gut punches. "I know people who work on AI risk who don't expect their children to make it to high school," he says, invoking a scenario in which the technology demolishes the very infrastructure of traditional education. Despite the sense of mounting panic, Roher and co-director Charlie Tyrell present an admirably robust crash course in AI and the biggest questions it poses, helped along by Roher's insistence on defining terms in plain language rather than startup buzzwords. Visually, the film is charmingly human, featuring colorful drawings and paintings by Roher, while whimsical stop-motion sequences hint at the influence of producer Daniel Kwan, the Oscar-winning co-director of Everything Everywhere All at Once. The vibrant creativity amid portents of doom provides some of the hope that Roher is desperately seeking. Yet later interviews with Silicon Valley techno-optimist promising AI that conquers diseases and climate change, followed by the CEO striking their usual balance between hype and the tones of sober caution, pass without much interrogation of grandeur claims. There is barely a moment spent considering why or how we should expect the current crop of fallible large language models to give rise to the mythical artificial general intelligence, AGI, that would outstrip human cognition. There are, at best, euphemistic acknowledgments from venture capitalist Reid Hoffman, for example, that any benefits will come along with unspecified harms. Even when the top players say that the near-term implications of AI are as significant as the advent of nuclear armament, they are defaulting to a familiar playbook, presenting their products as singularly consequential one way or another, hinting that only they can be trusted to advance them. The documentary accurately conveys how the unregulated AI gold rush is driven by the perverse incentives of a global market and a struggle for domination. It observes how this mania concentrates wealth and power in the smallest possible circle of elites. Strange, then, that the AI doc eventually carves out a gotta-hear-both-sides position in which the general public, not the executives under the microscope, are tasked with steering the AI revolution in the right direction. It's stranger still considering that Roher has produced lacerating critiques of the AI economy on the press circuit, blasting it as a Ponzi scheme. As he prepares to be a father, Roher has a touching conversation with his own dad, who advises him that while there are historical forces he can't control, he'll be a great parent no matter what, and that every generation has dealt with the existential distress of bringing life into an era of instability. Nevertheless, Roher and Tyrell call viewers to action, concluding the film by suggesting that ordinary citizens can pressure governments and corporations to ensure that AI evolves along the safest, narrowest path toward prosperity for all. The sequence is set to footage of other grand projects, including the construction of the Golden Gate Bridge, as though this piece of architecture were shaped by collective opinion. After a screening of the AI doc at Los Angeles Academy Music Museum on Monday, Tyrell Kwan Harris and producer Ted Tremper held a brief Q&A, with each reinforcing the idea that the feature was a productive step toward raising awareness of AI as a critical issue. "We're excited to continue this conversation," Kwan said at one point. "This is just the beginning, and I know that this movie will never be able to encompass everything." But he foresaw that the film would encourage audiences to link arms with us and step confidently into the darkness as we try to figure out what we do together. The documentary's vision of positive change, though, is hazy, perhaps clouded by both the necessity of a rosy ending for Roher's expanded family and the delicate suspension of skepticism whenever a billionaire enters the frame. In this narrative, these executives are apparently just along for the ride, like anybody else, their status a mere accident of fate, which sets them up for a modest shrug whenever they admit they don't totally understand what goes on inside the AI models they have already deployed at scale. As long as we're so preoccupied with whether these programs may soon possess consciousness or intent, we might want to treat these people as though they at least have agency. The next article is entitled, "The IRS Wants Smarter Audits. Palantir Could Help Decide Who Gets Flagged." Caroline Haskins, Source Wired. The Internal Revenue Service paid Palantir $1.8 million last year to improve a custom tool designed to help the tax agency identify the highest value cases for audits, collection of unpaid taxes, and potential criminal investigations, according to documents Wired obtained via public record request. When the contract was signed, the IRS said it was using more than 100 business systems and 700 methods built over the course of decades to select cases in which people may have incorrectly reported their taxes or owed the IRS money. As identifying potential tax discrepancies become more complex, the agency said its systems grew increasingly inefficient and it needed to find a solution. "Don't just give up. Get ahead with our biggest stories handpicked for you each day." This fragmented landscape can lead to a number of undesirable outcomes, including but not limited to duplication of effort and cost, poor understanding of gaps in the coverage, and suboptimal case selection, the IRS wrote in the document obtained by Wired outlining the scope of the contract. The custom tool that Palantir built to address the problem, dubbed the Selection and Analytic Platform, or SNAP, is designed to help the IRS streamline how it identifies potential fraud cases. For now, the software is only being used as part of a pilot program, according to the documents. Palantir and the IRS did not respond to requests for comment. It's unclear how long Palantir has been working on SNAP, but the IRS has bought technology made by the company since 2014, government contracting records show. In total, Palantir has been awarded more than $200 million in contracts and obligated payments with the IRS. The documents show the agency is now interested in deepening its relationship with Palantir. It's not clear exactly how SNAP might fit into existing technology systems at the IRS. Like other Palantir tools, it would likely sit on top of the IRS's highly splintered databases and help human auditors in identifying red flags in tax filings they might have otherwise missed. The contract indicates that the IRS is interested in modernizing its software and is turning to Palantir for help. According to one of the documents, Palantir's SNAP pilot is designed to surface key information about contracts, vehicles, and vendors from unstructured data from supporting documents. The IRS asked Palantir to craft three case selection methods related to parts of the existing tax code. The options included disaster zone claims, a form of tax relief for national disaster victims, residential clean energy credits, a tax credit program that offset the cost of installing things like solar panels or wind turbines, and Form 709 gift tax returns, which people may have to fill out when they give away valuable things like artwork, stocks, or corporate entities. Mitchell Gans, a professor at Hofstra University focused on gift and estate taxes, says that if SNAP is analyzing unstructured data from supporting documents, it may be examining forms providing adequate disclosure of property being gifted to another person. The IRS stipulates that these disclosures must include a detailed description of how the property's value was determined and the relationship between the giver and recipient. Gaines says that if, for instance, a person gives someone else a private business, the disclosure would need supporting information about how it was appraised, such as balance sheets and statements of net earnings, operating results, and dividends. Erica Newman, an accounting and finance professor at Youngstown State University, adds that public logs from money transfer apps like Venmo, as well as public storefronts on websites like Etsy and Depop, could also contain unstructured data of interest to the IRS. If Palantir's SNAP tool were to factor in data from Venmo or Depop when selecting audit cases, the IRS would have to already possess it. The contract documents state that the agency only wants Palantir to use existing data in SNAP today. For decades, the primary way the IRS decided which cases to audit was by calculating what is known as a discriminant information function, DIF, score for each taxpayer. According to the IRS, the higher the score, the greater the audit potential. Newman says that the way the scores are calculated is a black box, but researchers generally agree that the agency looks for similarities between current tax filings and past ones that eventually led to audits. Newman has studied other methods the IRS has experimented with to improve its case selection process, including contracting with companies like Coinbase to analyze information about crypto transactions and mining public social media posts for clues that an individual or business may be underreporting their income. The IRS also tried updating its own technology several times, but Newman says it has been plagued by technical difficulties. The agency basically never had a full successful modernization since the 1960s, she explains. Other parts of the federal government have also struggled to modernize when government workers apply for retirement. For instance, they have to go through a process that still partially involves paper documents stored in a limestone mine in rural Pennsylvania. But Newman says there's one thing that has made it especially difficult for the IRS to update its technology. The agency is incredibly unpopular with the public, making it a convenient punching bag for politicians looking to score points with voters. As a result, Newman says there's often a lack of political will to die on the hill of the IRS. Under the Trump administration, that dynamic has translated into shrinking resources and staffing cuts at the IRS. In February 2025, about 103,000 people worked for the agency. By July 2025, more than 25,000 people resigned or accepted deferred resignation and early retirement offers. Leaders at the IRS also tend not to stay in the job for very long, which means it can be difficult for big, multi-year projects to stay on track or get finished. The commissioner turnover is incredibly quick, and that, of course, has accelerated in the most recent years, Newman says. But it's just hard to get things done when there's not enough resources, and no one is really pushing that hard for it. The next article is entitled, A School District Tried to Help Train Waymos to Stop for School Buses. It Didn't Work. Arian Marshall, Source Wired. One of the purported advantages of self-driving car tech is that every car can learn from one vehicle's mistakes. Here's how Waymo puts it on its website. The Waymo driver learns from the collective experiences gathered across our fleet, including previous hardware generations. But in Austin, Waymo's vehicles struggled for months to learn how to stop for school buses as drivers picked up and dropped off children. An official with the Austin Independent School District, AISD, alleged that the vehicles had, in at least 19 instances, illegally and dangerously passed the district's school buses while their red lights were flashing and their stop arms were extended, rather than coming to complete stops as the law requires. In early December, Waymo even issued a federal recall related to the incidents, acknowledging at least 12 of them to federal regulators at the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, NHTSA, which oversees road safety. According to federal filings, engineers with the self-driving vehicle company had developed software changes to address the behavior weeks before. But even after the recall, the school bus passing incidents continued, according to school officials and a report from the National Transportation Safety Board, NTSB, an independent federal safety watchdog that's also investigating the situation. Now, email and text messages between school officials and Waymo representatives obtained by Wired through a public records request show the lengths that the Austin Public School District and Waymo went to try to solve the problem. AISD even hosted a half-day data collection event in a school parking lot in mid-December, the documents show, with several employees pulling together school buses and stop arm signals from across the fleet so the self-driving car company could collect information related to vehicles and their flashing lights. Still, by mid-January, over a month later, the school district reported at least four more school bus passing incidents that had taken place in Austin. The data we collected from the beginning of the school year to the end of the semester shows that about 98% of people that receive one violation do not receive another, an official with the school's police department told the local NBC affiliate that month. That tells us that that person is learning, but it does not appear the Waymo automated driver system is learning through its software updates, its recall, what have you, because we are still having violations. The situation raises questions about the self-driving technology's curious blind spots and the industry's ability to compensate for them even after they've been spotted. Self-driving software has long struggled with recognizing flashing emergency lights and road safety devices with long, thin arms, including gates and stop arms, says Missy Cummings, who researches autonomous vehicles at George Mason University and served as a safety advisor to the NHTSA during the Biden administration. If the company didn't fix this a few years ago, the more they drive, the more it's going to be a problem, she says. That's exactly what's happening here. Waymo did not respond to Wired's request for comment. A spokesperson for the Austin Independent School District referred Wired to the NTSB while the incidents are under investigation. A spokesperson for the NTSB declined to answer Wired's questions while its investigation continues. Illegal passing. By midwinter of 2025, AISD officials were frustrated. In one of the 19 incidents alleged by a lawyer for the district, in a letter later released by federal road safety regulators, a Waymo passed a school bus letting off children only moments after a student crossed in front of the vehicle and while the student was still in the road. Alarmingly, the lawyer wrote, 5 of the alleged incidents had occurred after Waymo had assured the district that it had updated its software to fix the problem. Federal regulators with the NHTSA had already launched a probe into the behavior. Austin ISD is evaluating all potential legal remedies at its disposal and intends to take whatever action is necessary to protect the safety of its students, if required, the lawyer warned. Just a few days later, on the same early December day, when news of Waymo's recall hit the news, Waymo's emergency response and outreach manager, Rob Patrick, called the assistant chief of the Austin District's Police Department, according to records obtained by Wired. Patrick and Waymo had a proposal, according to an email the assistant chief, Travis Pickford, sent to counterparts at the district. The company wanted to collect data on the district school buses, presumably, so its cars could more readily identify when they shouldn't be passed. Specifically, they wanted to focus their data collection on the amber and red light signals on each of our school buses and their car's ability to see them at varying distances, Pickford wrote in the email. By the following Monday, 3 days later, school transportation officials had agreed to gather at least 7 buses representing all the models in its more than 550 vehicle fleet at the school's athletic complex. Officials even passed Waymo the specifications of the buses' light setup. By mid-afternoon, the following Wednesday, the data collection event was over, and Waymo told school officials the company had what it needed. By Waymo's school bus passing incidents didn't stop. A preliminary report by the NTSB published in early March found that one ensuing incident on January 12 occurred after a Waymo remote assistant, a Michigan-based human tasked with helping the software when it was struggling on the road, incorrectly told the robo-taxi that the school bus ahead of it didn't have active signals on. 6 vehicles passed the school bus while it was stopped, the agency said. It is still investigating. Just days after those January incidents, a Waymo struck a child crossing in front of the vehicle near a school in Santa Monica, California. The child was reportedly unharmed, and Waymo later said that its model showed that a human driver would have hit the child at a higher speed than its car. Robot learning. Cummings, the autonomous vehicle researcher, says she's not surprised that Waymo's data collection event didn't solve all its school bus problems. It can take weeks or even months for software developers to use new data to train a self-driving car's AI-driven systems. What's more, data collected in an athletic facility's parking lot outside of the context in which Waymo's cars usually drive might not help much. Data generated in the parking lot is not going to be sufficient, she says. Waymo, Cummings says, should not be allowed to operate around schools during school pickup and drop-off until they get this problem fixed and can demonstrate it with specific tests. Philip Koopman, an autonomous vehicle software and safety researcher at Carnegie Mellon University, says the school bus incidents might be particularly challenging for Waymo software because stop signs mean slightly different things in different contexts. There are the stop signs at intersections, stop signs held in the hands of construction workers directing traffic, and stop signs attached to school buses. Waymo is trying to teach its software something very subtle, he says. The whole episode points to the complex challenges of operating a software-driven robot on sometimes unpredictably human roads. Teaching software to drive safely 99% of the time is the easy part, but the last 1% is really tough because we're trying to teach an exception, Koopman says. Waymo is struggling to teach their machine learning the lesson Waymo wants it to learn, Koopman says. That's not a surprise. This was always going to be a problem.